The Radio Today program with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Hello, I'm Trevor Dan. Welcome to a Radio Today programme extra, in which Martin Kellner gives his first interview since being sacked, rather unceremoniously, by BBC Radio Leeds. Now, in case you're new to the story, Martin is a veteran broadcaster and journalist. He's a regular on Five Lives Fighting Talk, the author of the popular column Screen Break, which used to run in The Guardian. He was a voice on Radio Air and Radio Hallam and lots of other commercial stations in the 80s. He's done shifts for Radio 2. And in recent years, he's found a home at BBC Leeds, first on a shared late-night show, then on breakfast, and more recently at lunchtime. In 2013, he discovered he had cancer, which led to a series of pretty nasty operations and some near-death experiences. Fortunately, though, he recovered, he returned to his show, and he was flourishing until last Friday.
I mean, that's how young people are these days. Ollie, who's my principal carer today, sole and principal carer, I said to him, God, I used to play this when it came out, a disco hit in 1980. How old were you in 1980, Ollie? Parents, not even, they weren't even together, were they? His parents hadn't even got together in 1980. He wasn't even a twinkle. And he thought it was a Louise Redknapp song, because the late 90s, she covered that. That was the original by the Average White Band. Now, why are we talking about music? I'll tell you in just a sec.
BBC Radio Leeds.
That's a clip from what turned out to be Martin Kellner's final show for BBC Radio Leeds. As it ended, he was asked to see the station's editor, Sanjeev Buttu.
Martin Kellner,
BBC Radio Leeds.
And here is Martin Kellner to tell us what happened. Martin, an extraordinary story and a very impressive piece of writing. As you say in your blog, people don't normally explain what happened when they got fired. I think a lot of people listening to this will have read the blog, but is it really true that you were given the heave-ho in less than 5 minutes while the rest of the staff were in a staff meeting somewhere else so they couldn't see you?
Probably less than 3 minutes, Trevor. I caught my train very comfortably. In fact, I even had time to go to Upper Crust and get a ham and cheese panini and a rather poor cup of tea.
These are the details that matter.
These are the details. So, yes, it was very quick.
So, Mr. Buttu, paint a picture for me of Mr. Buttu. What is he like, and what was your relationship like with him before he fired you?
Well, to be honest, I don't even know him very well. I mean, I knew him when he was a reporter, I think, for a while, or did some community stuff. And occasionally he used to, when I did the breakfast show at Radio Leeds, occasionally he used to produce a package from, I think he used to report from our Bradford, when we had a Bradford studio there. He produced a package. It was usually not very good, to be honest. And I'm being, you know, brutally honest here. And what I used to do is they would say, well, what about this package that Sanjeev sent? And I'd say, well, tell him we ran it at 6:20. He won't know. And that's basically, and I'm being frank, it's what we did. And he's risen through the managerial ranks. I don't know why, I don't know how, but I've nothing against him personally. And you see, but we never spoke much. He sat in the corner in the office, hatching his grand plan. And the grand plan turned out to be getting rid of me.
So let's just go back a little bit. You were on Radio Leeds doing breakfast and then you came off that. At what point were you ill? Were you already doing your lunchtime show when you were poorly?
Yes, I did the lunch show for a bit and then I got ill and had a bit of time off, a lot less than the doctor said, oh, you won't be ready to go back for a year. But within about 2 months, I was back. But only back doing one day a week and then 2 days a week. And I sort of ramped it up. And then I felt well again, so I started doing 5 days a week.
So, of course, they would claim, the BBC, I'm guessing, and of course they won't speak to us, but they would claim that they did their best by you, that they had a duty of care and they looked after you. But this extraordinary detail emerges that they wanted you to pay back some of the money they'd paid you while you were convalescing. I think many of us find that just extraordinary.
Well, not me. I don't know how the newspapers have represented this. I'm not lambasting the BBC at all. And certainly in terms of when I was ill and when I was convalescing, the managing editor then, who was Rosina Breen, was exceptionally solicitous, you know, came round and visited me and brought me boxes of chocolates. And they were, you know, we the sooner you can come back, lovely. You know, if you want to come back one day a week, whatever you want to do, 2 days a week, you know, we'd be delighted to have you back. We want you on air as soon as possible, etc., etc. So I've no complaints at all as the way I was treated when I was ill. I absolve the BBC from anything as far as that's concerned. When I got back...
But you do say that Sanjeev was asking you to pay this money back.
Not Sanjeev particularly. I think it's probably a perfect storm there. It was the BBC contracts people in Manchester. I mean, the bizarre thing is, they put me on a contract, which I didn't ask for, a contract whereby they paid me each month, and then at the end of the year it was totted up. I don't know how many shows it, whether I owed them money or they owed me money. They put me on that contract. We all know about the service companies, don't we? We all know.
Yeah, so you had to form yourself into a company.
I had to form myself into a company. Again, not something I wanted to do. They asked me to do it. They said this is better for, you know, for a number of reasons. And I wouldn't go into all the stuff about tax and national insurance, which I know probably the revenue and the BBC are still discussing that. But anyway, so I did what they said. I set up a service company. Then when I went back to work, the contracts people said, well, you owe this amount of money because we paid you. So I said, well, I can't, you know, at that point, I was still lying on the daybed watching daytime TV. So at that point, I said, well, you know, I can't just give you a check for, I don't know what it was, five grand, whatever it was. It was around about that sort of region. So they said, well, pay it back per week. We eventually came to the agreement that I would pay it all back 20 quid off each show. And I did joke at the time to my good friend Will Buckley. I said, you know, I'm unsackable because I owe the BBC money. If they sack me, they won't get their money back. And the joke at the time, and he said, well, when you've paid all the money back, they can get rid of you then.
And
God knows,
what?
They did.
Still, it doesn't feel very classy. You know, this is the BBC that has historically looked after people through all sorts of illnesses. And to demand 20 quid back, I don't know, Martin, but I think a lot of people would agree with me that that's just not the BBC of old.
No, it was not the BBC of old. But, you know, I'm not an idiot. I know what the current climate is as far as the media goes. And I wrote this blog not, you know, it wasn't an Alan Partridge blog. It wasn't meant to be. You know, you represented in different ways, but it wasn't a sort of whinging, self-serving blog. And I wasn't looking for sympathy, but I just wanted to tell everybody everything that happened. Because nobody ever, you know, what do radio presenters earn? Nobody knows. You know,
well, nobody knows. And you've told us. And we'll come on to that in a minute, because that might be one of the reasons why they let you go. Can I bring you back to that moment of you walk in to Sanjeev's office? Or does he have an office, or does he work in an open plan area?
He works in the open plan area, sits in the corner. He took me into the place where they edit Inside Out, the local documentary show.
Okay, yeah. So at this point, you know something's brewing, and he sits you down. How are you doing, Martin? I'm fine, how are you? Got a little something to tell you. How does that conversation go?
So exactly how it goes. He said, there's no easy way to say this. We're not renewing your contract.
Good. And you say, gosh, why?
No, I was quite stunned because I didn't think, you know, to be honest, Radio Leeds doesn't have a huge audience. It doesn't have a lot of when I say stars, it doesn't have a lot of people who are really well known in the community, if you like. I didn't think they could do without me. You know, I don't think Radio Leeds is that rich in talent that it can get rid of somebody who's broadcast for 30 odd years, is the same age as the listeners, let's be honest, and, you know, has a real stake in the community, as I say in the blog. So I didn't.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Don't you think that half the problem with local radio is that it isn't local? And here they are getting rid of somebody who is, as you say so eloquently in your blog, is from the area, has children who went to school there and work there, and you are the audience as well as the broadcaster. It seems insane to get rid of you, but continue to import, as they do, people from, you know, all over England to work there.
Yeah, well, it seems insane to me, and I don't know. Maybe there's a grand plan that I don't know. You know, he said, we're moving in a different direction. This was after he'd said there's no easy way to say this, and I didn't reply at that point because I was a little bit stunned, which I suppose, in a way, it was a textbook sacking. It was a textbook sacking from the golden days of commercial radio. It was exactly how, you know, you've just done your last show. It was one of those sackings. Everybody out of the way, so that, you know, because he'd called a meeting elsewhere, so made sure everybody was upstairs, away, you know, in the canteen area, away from the area where, you know, where we were having this conversation, where we were having this sacking. And it, as I say in the blog, it was the most charmless sacking I've ever suffered.
Why would anybody, do you think, want to get rid of somebody so suddenly without giving them the opportunity to say goodbye to their listeners? Is it just that they're scared of a Danny Baker-style meltdown?
Yeah, I would have thought so. I mean, I got a call from Justin Morehouse, the comedian, on the Sunday, and he said to me, I can't understand it. It's not like you're some young Turk. He said, you're establishment. He said, oh, you don't take this the wrong way, but you're establishment, which I am. I wasn't going to be Alpha Papa. I wasn't going to barricade myself in the studio. It wasn't going to be, for your older listeners, Rex Bob Lowenstein. None of that was going to happen. But clearly they were worried about a Danny Baker-style scenario.
And are they going to replace your show? Is someone else coming in to simply keep your seat warm? Or they didn't tell you any of that. There's not a big schedule change coming where they're wiping away the lunchtime show, for instance, which might be a cost-saving measure.
That's my suspicion, but I've no way of knowing. I mean, he did say to me, oh, we're moving in a different direction. He said, listen in a month's time and you'll hear it's completely different. I said, well, are you fucking listening in a month's time, to be honest? Why would I? Why the fuck would I be listening in a month's time? I'm just assuming it's because, as I said in the blog, that it's that I'm easy to get rid of because I'm a freelance. Contract runs out middle of May. That's it, out the door, easy.
So we touched on money. It looks as though BBC licence fee payer has been giving you something in the region of 50 grand a year to do that programme.
Yeah, a little bit less because, you know, obviously time off and things. But yeah. Well,
roughly that area.
I've been paying back £20 for the show fee. So my show fee's been 170 rather than 190.
Now, I know a little bit about the funding of BBC Local Radio, and I know that's high. That is very high. And obviously, you're a nationally known broadcaster, so you will have been able to negotiate a pretty good fee to start with. I wonder if the situation would be the same, Martin, if you were on £100 a show.
I suspect not. I don't know. Well, the great thing is, if they'd have said, look, it's too much money, we'll pay you £150 instead of 190. I'd have probably carried on doing it because I just enjoyed doing it. I'd have probably carried on, to be honest. Actually, I don't really want this advertised widely. I'm prepared to. Martin Kellner will work for food.
Okay, here's my other point that I wanted to just toss around with you, Martin. In these days of social media, it's very difficult to be two people. And I put it to you that you must be quite difficult for the BBC to manage. Because on the one hand, when you go on BBC Radio Leeds, you are that congenial chap who doesn't swear and et cetera, all those impartial things. But online, you're very coruscating and you can be quite rude and quite opinionated in a way that I wonder whether they find that's uncomfortable. Do you think there's anything in that?
I think I've had problems with that in the past. When I was sacked once before, when I was doing The Late Show, the chap who sacked me then did say, you're not female friendly. And I said, well, that's not true. I said, you know, a lot of the women around the station will say I'm too female friendly. I'm not going to go there. But no, they said, you're not female friendly. So I said, of course I am. You know, they love me. I get all these texts, hundreds of them, you know, Sheila and Betty and all these people. They love me. And he said, well, you're not female friendly on your podcast. Meaning the podcast was a lot more sweary. Well, it was very sweary because it was a podcast. So yes, that could be a pro. I don't think on this occasion. So at that point, that was a sacking that I could sort of understand. You know, and you get sacked. But, you know, there was a bit of a conversation about it. I mean, I disagreed, but there seemed to be a reason for it. This time, well, it's a cost-cutting measure. It's got to be. If it's not a cost-cutting measure, they're even more balmy than I thought they were.
Okay, so we're talking about a BBC that used to be quite sure-footed about these kind of decisions. And in recent months, we've had the Tony Blackburn affair, we've had Ian Lee, now we've got you. They're not very good at this, are they? And I suspect, I'm going to put this to you, that it's because the people who run radio stations now are not people with a great deal of experience in running radio. They are journalists. They may be good ones, they may be bad ones, but that's their shtick. And they're plummeted into these jobs where they're meant to understand the art and craft of broadcasting. And I think some of them just simply don't get it.
You've said it all. That's absolutely 100% true. I wouldn't disagree with any of that at all.
So where do you go now? I'm suggesting talk radio.
Very much hoping. I'd like to. I'm not in any great rush, but I would like to get another gig somewhere or other. It would seem that I would be a decent fit, I would have thought, on talk radio. And already I do talk sport on a Friday with Hawksby and Jacobs, you know, talking about sport on TV. So no reason why that wouldn't be a possible place. I should think BBC Local Radio is probably out now.
I would imagine the David Holdsworth memo machine has been running hot, wouldn't you? Do not employ this man.
I would have thought so, yeah. Because in the past, when they were a little bit more autonomous, and when I got the sack when I was doing The Late Show, the one I've talked about, that particular sacking, I immediately got a call from Three Counties Radio saying, can you come do some stuff for us, stand in for 3 weeks, 4 weeks? I think I did some work at Radio Sheffield, etc. in those days. But I think they weren't in this ridiculous state that they're in at the moment of panic, basically.
OK, let's just pull back for a bit of sort of overall BBC strategy talk. You talk in your blog, and you've mentioned this before, I think we've even discussed it on the podcast before, the idea of how the BBC could breathe life into local radio by simply, frankly, not being there, by being there to help the community talk to itself, which was probably the original vision in the 1960s, if we're to be honest, rather than saying, we have parachuted in here to your local community to do programmes for you and about you. Is there any future, do you think, of the BBC perhaps working more closely with community radio so that it can allow the community to develop these shows and the programming that the community itself wants rather than handing it to them from London?
Well, again, it's more or less what I've suggested in the blog. I've not used the words community radio, but I think that the problem with community radio is it doesn't sound quite professional enough. You know, if you're listening to Radio 2 and then you listen to community radio, it sounds like you're getting an amateur product. And I think there's no reason why, especially with digital technology these days, there is no reason why local radio should sound any less professional than national radio. And there are people who would who would do it, and I'm one of them. I think it would save the BBC money because local radio, let's be honest, is hugely expensive. For each station is run on a shoestring compared to Radio 2 or Radio 4. But taken overall, the cost per listener is very, very high.
And when you look at the local radio figures, it's absolutely clear as well that the items they spend their money on, which is what they would call quality journalism, many of their listeners don't actually like. They don't want yet another interview with yet another councillor about, you know, housing crises or something. What they actually want for quite a lot of the time is some congenial conversation about the place they live, which was your stock in trade, really, wasn't it?
Totally. It's rather like, if I can use this argument, years ago, because you and I grew up in the 60s and 70s, if you'd see a programme featuring black people on the TV, it would be, today we talk about the race issue. We're talking about the race problem. And black people were seen as a problem. And then black people said, why can't we just be on EastEnders and Coronation Street and have fun? You know, we're not a problem. And that's the thing. It's probably the wrong analogy. But with local radio, everything is an issue, a problem. And that's, people want to know the fun of living in Leeds or Wakefield or Huddersfield. They don't necessarily all the time want to know about wheelie bins and people not picking up dog shit off of the pavement. You know,
this is very much Danny Baker's view, Martin, isn't it? That his show on BBC London, much lamented, not least by Danny, it was actually, you know, at its essence, a local radio show, because it was people in London talking about cool things in London and talking about memories. And some of it was quite light, but actually it was, you did learn stuff about London. It was informative. And what it wasn't about was the drains in Streatham. And my feeling is that nowadays, if you want to know what's going on with the drains in Streatham, or even if you frankly want to hear the local weather forecast, you're probably getting it from some other device. And just using the radio to bring you all that seems to not be using it at its best.
Yes, I mean, the bizarre thing is, the David Holdsworth Nations and Regions and all that nonsense, they said it's going to be about personality now. That was the last month. Ah. Last month it was going to be about personality.
And, of course, they know a lot about that.
Yes. So why, you know, I mean, whatever you say about me, love me or hate me, I do have a personality. And it was sort of personality-style radio. So I can't understand. Well, the reason I can't understand it is because there has to be, it's got to be about money, I would have thought.
Well, Martin, you have every right to enjoy being a cause célèbre, and I hope it works out for you.
I didn't want to be a cause célèbre. I really didn't.
Well, you bloody well are, pal.
I know, and I didn't want to. And I was just writing that to, you know, I'm a writer, and I was writing that to explain what happened, and because people never really know. The very first paragraph of my blog, I say normally it's like we're dissidents under the Stasi in East Germany. And, you know, once you disappear, disappeared or in Argentina during the Troubles there, you disappeared in the middle of the night. Nobody ever hears of you.
Martin Kellner, you did not go quietly. Congratulations. It's great talking to you as always. Thanks for agreeing to chat with the Radio Today programme. Always a pleasure. And good luck securing some sort of remuneration elsewhere. I don't think it'll be long.
Thanks a lot, Trev.
Martin Kellner, now ex BBC Radio Leeds. This has been a Radio Today programme extra. Keep in touch with all things radio via In Radio, our online 24/7 station. Thanks to Martin and to Stephanie Hurst, who let us use her studio. There'll be a full podcast up tomorrow. Please join me for that. Bye-bye.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.